A lot of people move around between Jackson and Josephine counties on a regular basis, so it makes sense to make some plans together as one big community. That is exactly the approach the Community Health Improvement Plan has taken for the two counties. The plan took shape over the last couple of years. Now comes the work of implementing it and taking steps to make Jackson and Josephine counties healthier. The plan lists three major points of concern above all others: mental health, housing, and parenting and life skills. Let's get into the details with two guests. Angela Warren is the project coordinator. She's the collaboration manager at the Jefferson Regional Health Alliance. Angela, welcome back to The Exchange.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting us.
Belle Shepherd is with us as well. She's with the Oregon Health Authority, where her title is Innovator Agent, one of our favorite titles. Belle, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks.
They both joined us in June of 2018 to talk about the pathway to the Community Health Improvement Plan. So that was the entrance interview, and this is sort of the exit interview, and then where we go from here. So good to have you both back here on The Exchange. So let's talk about the process of forming this up. I mean, what used to happen in assessing the health of a region like this, and how did that change for this plan to become a reality?
Sure. A lot of our organizations are required by federal or state mandates to complete some kind of an assessment, whether it's our coordinated care organizations every 5 years, the hospitals, the federally qualified health centers, the county public health departments. Some are on 2 years, some are on 3 years, some are on 5 year cycles. Excuse me, but they did it as individual organizations or agencies. In 2013, the local CCOs got together and said, well, we could at least do our CCO assessment together. And that started the kind of idea of collaborating across the community for the assessment. When we began to prepare for the cycle in 2018, we said it would be great if instead of just the CCOs, we really did one regional assessment that everyone could use. So we started meeting and talking about how do we get all those 2, 3, and 5 year cycles together. We discovered that we had an every 3 year kind of sweet spot that would meet everybody's needs. And so we did the first collaborative regional assessment in 18 with the hospitals, the CCOs, the federally qualified health centers, all of the addictions service providers, and a lot of other community partners to prepare for a regional strategic plan around community health.
We'll have to work our way through the alphabet soup as we go. The CCOs are coordinated care organizations,
correct,
which are basically the local entities that distribute the Oregon Health Plan benefits.
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Right. Oregon Health Plan. Medicaid population specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also charged with looking at the health of the population, the total population. So not just Medicaid, which is about 30% in Jackson County and 35% in Josephine County. So the Community Health Improvement Plan actually is broader than that. Mm-hmm. So CCOs kind of do the both and work.
So beyond just delivering services, also finding out what we can do to make those services better, more efficient, make the community healthier. This is part of the mandate.
That's right. Yeah.
So the assessment part sounds big, Angela Warren. You just described some of it. You're talking to hospitals and CCOs and a bunch of other entities.
It is big, and we took a full year to conduct the assessment. We brought in some outside consultants who've done collaborative regional work before on assessments because we wanted to make sure we really engaged our community. We allowed a full 6 months of community engagement activities with surveys and community focus groups and forums and interviews, and really did an intensive community engagement process so that the priorities that came out of that community health assessment and informed the development of this improvement plan came from the community, with specific outreach to some of our vulnerable populations or populations we don't always hear from in rural communities or special populations with special needs.
How did you get those voices? I mean, what was the process you generally used there?
We had a steering committee that's very well connected in service providing in the community, and they went out to groups that they work with or groups that they are aware of, existing groups that they know of that meet occasionally, so that we could get them, whether it was, you know, a group of Latina moms with young children, whether it was homeless youth at the Maslow Project, veterans, seniors in the disabled population. We went out to groups that we know about, that our steering committee partners know about, and asked them the questions.
Belle Shepherd, were there any particular directives the state had in here to say, you know, make sure you do this as part of the process?
So the state wants you to engage a number of partners. So that's the early learning community, mental health populations, oral health providers, traditional health workers, and Native populations, and also just making sure you're hearing from, as Angela said, voices that you would not normally hear from. So it's really easy to send out a survey and say, oh, who's going to fill out the survey? Well, most people don't. I'm a survey junkie. I'll fill out pretty much any survey that comes my way. Most people will not say that about themselves. So going to populations where they are and listening and hearing, and then making sure you kind of go back out to those populations. So that's really what that the state has directed, and I think that's gotten more directed in the not only this last process, but in the future years. So really in Jackson and Josephine County, we've begun to take that on even before some of those mandates have come, recognizing that there are a lot of populations, deaf and hard of hearing, disabled, seniors, just as Angela mentioned, that we really don't hear from enough or listen to enough or kind of make sure we're taking that guidance.
So this took a lot of outreach, a lot of follow-ups, it sounds like, and a lot of persistence at doing both.
It did. It absolutely did.
All right. So the result then is a plan. And essentially, what does the Community Health Improvement Plan do at its core?
The Community Health Improvement Plan establishes the three priority areas of focus that the community identified. And there were a number of things the community identified, and they sort of coalesced into these three big topic areas. The first of which you mentioned, behavioral health, which includes mental health and substance use. The second is housing, safe, affordable, accessible housing for all. And the third is parenting support and life skills. And that's really related directly to a lot of the work that's been done in this area around adverse childhood experiences and resilience and strengthening families and their protective factors to ensure healthy homes.
The Community Health Improvement Plan for Jackson and Josephine Counties is the discussion topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We are talking to Angela Warren from Jefferson Regional Health Alliance, who's the project coordinator. Belle Shepherd is with the Oregon Health Authority. She's an innovator agent. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Grab your headphones. We have a call here from Kevin in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Angela and Belle. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I actually attended Jefferson Regional Health Authority Mental Health Work Group meeting in Grants Pass last week, and I was a bit concerned by what I saw. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but Oregon ranks at the very bottom of all the 50 states around mental health outcomes and mental health access to services. MentalHealthAmerica.net did a fairly recent study, about a 60-page study, and in multiple measures, Oregon is at the very bottom of the list. Their web address is MentalHealthAmerica.net. Anyway, with that awareness that Oregon is at the bottom of the list around mental health services and the adverse outcomes, I would have expected to hear that reflected in the mental health work group meeting I attended last week, and it was really quite striking to me that there was that really was in contrast to what I saw. There was no urgency that I could see amongst the people there. It was all basically stakeholders with organizations, and they were looking at it through their organizational lens, and they were not talking about major changes. One of the things they did talk about was basically how to fill out paperwork so that you could report what your organization is doing back to this work group.
So not enough focus, you felt, on what the needs of people with mental illness are.
Profoundly. They were looking at it through their own lens, through each of their individual organizations, but there was no urgency whatsoever. And even more troubling, as part of the new jail project, mm-hmm. NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, has put on three public presentations on what we might be able to do to help to address pretrial, mm-hmm. Basically pre-arrest diversion. And there's a number of innovative programs in Oregon that have been very helpful at providing services and finding gaps in services and looking at barriers to access to services. And I noticed that the Jackson County Mental Health people who attended those meetings used the existence of this Community Health Improvement Project as a deflection why those other solutions would not work in Jackson County.
Right, Kevin, thanks for the input. I want to move on here because I want to get the question answered and get to some of the other details in the Community Health Improvement Plan. The sense of urgency that he finds lacking, I want to see if either one of you can address that.
Sure. As I mentioned, I think when we talked at the meeting, there is absolutely a sense of urgency for everyone in that room. You just happened to hit a meeting where one of the things we were doing was helping the group figure out how to document some of the ongoing work that they are doing to address these needs. So in one meeting, you happened to be there when we were workshopping how to submit those things into this shared data so that we can learn from each other. Where are the gaps? What can we do to better? What can we do together in a different way to make better use of resources? We're all looking at this problem through a collaborative lens, which is new. And so there's a lot of relationship building and trust building and conversation happening. And I'm really glad you attended. But just so you know, that, you know, was one of what's been 3 years of meetings, and there'll be lots more.
All right. Thanks again for the Kevin.
Yeah, I would just suggest, Kevin. I mean, what happens in the planning process is wanting to, in the past, it was, we all agree this might be a bad thing, and now we're going to agree on that, and then we're going to retreat and do what we want to do. And so sometimes we're band-aiding projects, or there's a one-year grant that you get, and people don't always know about it. We don't evaluate or create data so we know whether it's sustainable or it's a workable solution. And so within this process, it is much more collaborative. And frankly, when you work with a lot more partners, it does take longer than we want to do. We all want to hit the road running. But there are a lot of new things that are happening. I had an opportunity to sit with some other Oregon Health Authority officials yesterday, with some of the Jackson County judges, a sheriff, and other professionals, talking about some of the work that is happening, and also recognizing that there is a big systemic issue in mental health across the state. So while we have needs and for many resources in Jackson and Josephine counties, the state also is looking at that. So I think we'll see some movement on that in the legislative session that will help both the state and the local communities. And we need to be prepared to do that as a collaborative group, which I think is part of this CHIP work that's happening.
CHIP being the Community Health Improvement Plan for Jackson and Josephine Counties. That's the discussion topic. Bill Shepherd with the Oregon Health Authority, Angela Warren with Jefferson Regional Health Alliance, our guests on the exchange. You can join us at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. So let's explore again the three areas of need identified and prioritized. One, behavioral health and well-being. That includes mental health and substance abuse. Two, housing for all, safe, affordable, appropriate housing. Three, families matter, parenting support, and life skills. To continue on the mental health part, because substance abuse seems to be a fairly large chunk of this, and I wonder if one of the issues that you detected was that people still fear asking for help with any mental health issues, substance abuse or not.
Absolutely. In both the behavioral health section of the CHIP and in the parenting support and life skills section, one of the strategies is specifically to deal with stigma out in the community for seeking help, whether it's needing help with some of the issues that parents face in raising their kids, or issues around seeking services or needing help with mental health or substance use. So stigma was prevalent in the discussions as this CHIP was formed in actually all three priority areas.
Now, even when they do seek help, are they running into some issues with things like insurance coverage?
Absolutely. There are lots of challenges to accessing services. It seems, at least right now, that if you are a Medicaid OHP client, you have a little bit easier time because of the way that system accesses mental health services than if you're commercially insured. But it's still a really challenging system. And you have so many people that have co-occurring issues with mental health and substance use. And so figuring out how to navigate between the various providers for all of those services is something we're looking at. How do we better coordinate care?
All right. So coordination is one thing, but how about actual facilities and people practitioners? I mean, were there any findings of lack there within the Community Health Improvement Plan?
Absolutely. There's a huge workforce need for behavioral health. And we know that there are efforts underway at SOU and RCC to develop more people that can fill those positions. Statewide, it's an issue. There's a real shortage of behavioral health specialists. And so we're making use of peer supports, community health workers. There are all kinds of levels of training that you can have in behavioral health. And I think what we're trying to do is make use of everything we've got and continue to grow that workforce.
And go ahead.
We also see that in the Student Success Act that was passed by the last legislative session, where
the new corporate tax to put more money into schools.
Yeah, and one of those mandates is around behavioral health and mental health providers within the schools, and how do we improve that system? Because really, that is a level of prevention. So we're not aging people into a system, if we can really kind of address that early on, because a lot of our students have issues early on based on whatever trauma they're coming out of with their families. The other thing I want to mention, while we have those three big bulk areas that the CHIP is focused on locally, Community Health Improvement Plan, we do like to say CHIP a lot, but even those it doesn't sound as healthy. The kind of cross threads that are really important are poverty. We recognize that people that are in poverty or that are on the edge of poverty really have more issues. Health equity and health disparities, so people of color, families maybe that are immigrants, or just really have, other disparities, maybe sexual orientation, gender. Really, that's a big through thread. And then social isolation is a big one as well. So someone with a mental health issue or an addictions issue, or even families that are isolated or seniors that are isolated, really important pieces to kind of look at across all three of those areas. So again, those are kind of not your traditional things that people might think that community providers are necessarily identifying as issues, but they really are kind of the undercutting cross currents in our community.
I am struck by the crossover too, because mental health, substance abuse, you just mentioned trauma in youth. I mean, this also gets into the parenting support and life skills, right, and the acknowledgement of adverse childhood experiences, ACEs study, all of that. I want to pause along the way to get to number two, which is the housing for all. I mean, it sounds like even people who do have housing get squeezed by costs, and they have health effects from it, that sort of thing.
Right, and the housing group is focused on affordable housing, which we know is an issue community-wide. It's also focused on supportive housing, housing for people who do need services, to make sure that they have those services accessible and oftentimes needed to be on-site. What does residential housing look like, or transitional housing look like, for people who maybe can't stay in a hospital but aren't ready to go home, or who are homeless? Where do they go to receive services? It's really tough to treat a patient who is discharged requiring medication that has to be refrigerated if they aren't somewhere where they have refrigeration. I mean, really basic things around housing. And so one of the things we've noticed is, no matter what conversation you're in this valley, housing is a part of it. Whether it's workforce development or health or education, everybody's talking about housing.
Well, so one of the goals here is to increase the cheaper housing supply, which certainly comes with its own issues. What kinds of approaches are you talking about here?
Well, some of the things are obviously going to be advocacy around policy changes. Some of it's going to be some collaborative brainstorming, where maybe somebody's got some land that needs to be developed and somebody else has a project that needs land and somebody else has grant funds. How are we putting the pieces together? We do have projects. I'm aware of one in particular that has been on the city books for quite a while as an approved project, but just not all the resources have come together to make it happen. So how do we get the information shared as a learning community around what's out there that we could be developing right now that doesn't need us starting from scratch? So I think that's some of the conversations. And we're working, in Jackson County, the Continuum of Care with Connie Wilkerson. I think you just talked to them
yes.
a couple weeks ago.
A couple days ago,
okay, is really connected in, and they're doing great work to help really identify what the scope and scale of the problems are.
All right, so let's move on from housing into parenting support and life skills. By what measures are parenting and life skills lacking?
Well, one of the things we do is we look at the fact that we don't have adequate access to daycare. We don't have adequate access to pre-kindergarten education. We have kids coming to school that are not ready for the learning environment. All of the ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences, work around resilience and self-regulation in the classroom. Is really important when you talk about the behavioral problems that we've seen on the increase in our school system, in our K-12 school system. What kinds of things are we doing to help families to mitigate the effects of trauma on families, so that those parents have the supports they need to help those kids learn self-regulation and to validate resilience and self-regulation at home?
Well, here again, there's an interlocking of issues, because when you look at, for example, people who are stressed about having to maintain a house payment, their home life can be tough. They may turn to substance abuse. So all three of them end up rolled up essentially together. One of the goals here, though, is to increase parental resilience. You were talking about child resilience, but what would be some of the pathways to increase parental resilience?
Well, one of the things that's happened with all of the trauma-informed approaches that have been out in the community is schools have begun to have increased their parent education around adverse childhood experiences of the parents, and the fact that a lot of these things are generational cycles, and helping parents understand the trauma that they experienced affects them now, it affects their health now, their children's health, and the kinds of things that they can do, just acknowledging what their trauma has been, and giving them some tools to help build their own resilience helps them with their children.
If, for example, the parent is stressed by money, can't miss work, trying to keep up with the house payment, doesn't have a lot of spare time, how do you make these kinds of services usable?
Yeah, that's a really complicated thing. And I know one of the things you'll sometimes hear out in the community is we're talking about the no wrong door policy. A lot of parents get what's called agency fatigue, where to seek all the different services. They've got to go here, who then sends them here, who sends them there. And what we're trying to do within the system is have increasing conversations around, if they come to you, how can you get them to connected to the things they need from your desk before you send them out the door to go to someplace else? What are the resources? What can you solve for them there? And a lot of organizations are experimenting with different ways to do that, to provide warm handoffs, to have referral systems that they negotiate within their own organizations to try and help that with parents.
Also, are there ways that workforce can help with that? So, in the past, there may have been childcare on site at some facilities or some support with that, or ways that work was flexible for some families where they needed to, juggle childcare issues. Can you subsidize those types of pieces? So, thinking through not just the agency lens, but how do all partners in our community kind of support families and recognize this is a struggle. It wasn't the same as for many people growing up where you had maybe, your grandma or your aunt or someone else that was helping out with families. And certainly people could live on one income then too, right, in terms of the cost of housing and these other pieces. So how has that shifted, and how do all parts of the community help support the families?
So I get the sense here, and we're down to our last minute now, that what we're talking about is not like any new one big thing coming out from the Community Health Improvement Plan, but a lot of old things reconsidered and potentially connected better.
I think so, but I think there is one new thing coming out, which is the idea of looking at these things, at these systems level issues together. Breaking down our barriers to looking at them through one familiar filter. Having the conversations around these shared goals and strategies is very different than anybody having it just in their organization with their organizational lens. So I think that alone is a pretty significant difference this time around.
And again, there's an opportunity when a community is collaborating to potentially get more funding or access from state and federal resources. And so when we're speaking the same language and thinking through the same lens towards the same end goal, there are some opportunities. There's some housing funds, like I said, school success. So there's lots of opportunity, I think.
Bell Shepherd, Oregon Health Authority, Angela Warren, Jefferson Regional Health Alliance, the Community Health Improvement Plan, Jackson and Josephine Counties. Thank you both. That's
Thank
the
you.
Jefferson
Thank
Exchange,
you.
Hour 1.